This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's reading comes from Proverbs chapter 14, verse 10. The heart knows its own bitterness, and no stranger shares its joy. So keep your feelings to yourself. This is Scripture Read Badly. My name is Ryan.
And I'm Jeremy, and this week we delve further into the life of Isaac. And we start in chapter 24 when Abraham was getting pretty sweetly old. Mm-hmm. And he is very adamant that Isaac not take a wife from the area they were in. He wants him to go back to his homeland to get a wife. And the servant that he sends on this mission is like, what if the woman wants to stay in the land? And Abraham repeats himself, my son will not go back to that place.
Yeah.
Because he's adamant that God has called his family line to where they are.
Yep.
And then it shows this servant walking along and finding a lady. Her name is Rebecca, and
she ends up coming back and being Isaac's wife. So Isaac is he's 40 years old at this time, and Abraham, so Sarah has died 3 years previously. Abraham tells his oldest, most important servant to put his hand under his thigh,
which that's where the farts come from.
It's apparently a sign of swearing an oath, kind of like placing your hand on the Bible, or is there anything else that you would place your hand on or under
these days? My sword. The blessing sword.
Yeah.
One of my friends had a sword that he had above his, like, it wasn't his fireplace, it was different, but he'd always bring it down to, like, cut birthday cakes and to, like, do important gestures. So.
Interesting.
Yep. I think he was a military guy.
Wow. An ancient military guy?
He'd be 70 now.
Okay, I guess.
Is that ancient? Well, we're talking about Abraham, who's 175, so he's half-aged.
Yeah, he's not even, he hasn't even reached middle age yet. Nope.
He's a young chicken.
No, Abraham had his midlife crisis when God appeared to him and said, like, you're going to be the father of many nations.
I'm going to be a dad? No! I just started my golf career.
Crisis, and then Hagar happened. Okay, so Abraham understands the significance of being separate from Canaan. Like you said, he repeats himself multiple times. He doesn't want his son to marry someone from there. My question here is, does he think that Isaac might stay there and thus not leave the area of Haran or
Definitely.
Wherever it is?
That's what all boys do. That's why my mom never wanted me to marry an American, because they'd take me away from her.
Yeah.
Take that, Mom. I took myself away.
I am marrying an American, and we're going to live in the Gold Coast with my parents.
Take that, Gold Coast!
Yep, the Gold Coast can suck it. Great. Okay, so his servant is like, what if she doesn't want to come? And then Abraham says, God will send an angel ahead of you. So I don't know if that means he'll appear to them. It doesn't seem that they have seen an angel when he talks to them about it. So maybe it was just clearing the way before him, something like that. Seems as though the servant took a bride price or a dowry of some kind.
A ton of monies.
10 camels and all sorts of choice gifts, including the one ring to rule them all and a couple of bracelets to rule some of them later on that we see.
I wonder if they had the term gold digger back then, or is it everyone just went for the monies?
I imagine that most people would have been gold diggers of some kind.
Perfect. As long as it's upfront.
Yep. And it seems as though it was a fairly decent bride price, because it gets accepted later on. So he went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor, which is Abraham's brother. Apparently it's near Haran, where Abraham's dad died and where Abraham set out from.
Is this like from Sydney to Melbourne far away?
I think so.
Nice. That's a good horse journey. Or camel.
He was probably on a camel. Yeah. Camel Trek. So, yeah, we don't exactly know how long it is. I have a funny little map here, but I don't think I'll have time. Nope, I have got it. I've got it. Okay, so Haran versus other places. Nope, can't find it. Great. So it was pretty long, and that's that. So the camels were thirsty by the time they got to Haran. I think camels being thirsty is probably a rare thing.
Very rare.
Although it does make sense at the end of a long journey that you would want to have them
Melbourne
stock
to Sydney
up.
Is quite far for
it
a camel.
It is. So they knelt by a well outside the city at the time that women came to draw water. And so I made a note here that the well was right outside the city. So I imagine it probably wouldn't have taken too long for them to go out and back, maybe an hour's journey all up. As opposed to what some people walk even these days in desert places to go out to a well. And even with Jesus and the woman at the well, it was there in the middle of the day. That is not when people go out to draw water because it's the hottest and
gross.
It just is not a good idea. So he was being pretty strategic with going at this time.
Yep.
Because he knew all the young women would come out from the households at this time, and he'd be able to
put them in a bag, take them away. Come on, get on the camel, go.
Basically, so he makes a deal with God. I personally have prayed a couple of things like this, but...
Me too.
He said, whoever I ask to get me a drink, if she says she will also give water to my camels, then she's the one. She is totally
classic.
The one. That is the condition of how this is going to happen. Please say it is so, because I think it's a pretty good idea.
So we should all do that this week.
Yeah,
all you single blokes,
pray that the girl that you're meant to marry is going. You ask somebody a question. If they answer in a very particular way, it's definitely them.
Yeah, or no. Better yet, send your servant out to do
send
it.
Your servant.
All you single blokes with servants, loose.
Just send a dozen camels or so, and you'll be right. Okay, but then much like in life nowadays, when you pray something like that, God has something better in mind, or if he does choose to abide by your terms, he does it in his timing, and he has it be on the first go. So the very first woman that he sees, he finishes speaking in his heart, as it says later on, and he looks up, oh, it's Rebecca! Oh, yes, she's totally the one! He's just watching her as she's drawing water. And then,
in slow motion to the Chariots of Fire soundtrack. And the camels are all like hypercolors.
Yep.
For some reason, I don't know why.
Because he's dehydrated.
Yeah,
hallucinating.
Because he is hallucinating.
He definitely needs water. Okay, one such personal experience that I've had with something like this, even along these types of lines, it did not involve a servant. Sadly, I am not that rich. But what happened was there was a time where I was... it was October of 2012.
The 70s.
2012, okay.
Yep.
Okay? And there was this girl that I was kind of into, but then we had a talk about it and I felt like she was not the right girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, I'm done with this. I don't want to like another girl ever again. Or, well, maybe tell me who I'm going to marry in 3 years, God. Just please, just
wow.
let me just not have to deal with it now. And 3 years later, my now fiance was just starting her discipleship training school.
Chariots of Fire theme.
In Newcastle. And
hypercolors.
Yep, she was totally into me right away. And
yeah, boom!
It took me a while to come around, but I ended up coming around, and then... In hindsight, I went, whoa, that was 3 years later, possibly to the day that I met her.
Sweet.
Which is kind of crazy. And you didn't have to do that, God. You really didn't have to. But that was pretty cool.
That is very cool.
I was definitely not expecting it to actually come true. I think I'd forgotten about it completely. I chucked a number on it that was far enough out there that it kind of, it gave me hope because it was kind of close, yeah. But then at the same time it was, I'm just going to forget about it. And it was, yep. All coming to light. Had any experiences where you have prayed and said, God, this is what you need to do, and then he did it or didn't do it or something?
Nah. Subtle ones like, I want to go somewhere else at some stage, but I didn't really believe that would happen, and then it did.
Mm.
So that's always good.
Yep. Yep. Some confirmation, like an outreach location that you're praying into, and
yep.
You say, if I have a dream that is about this location, then it's the one I'm going to go to. And then, boom, you have a dream. Whoa. Don't know if I influenced that myself. Regardless, I believe I'm going to discern whether or not that was God speaking. And that's what this servant does.
Servants!
Rebecca comes out to draw water. She is attractive. She is a virgin. And she's Abraham's niece. So she ticks all the boxes.
Inbred. Rich. Beautiful. Yep.
And it says that he ran to meet her after she had finished drawing water, which seems to imply that he doesn't want to miss his chance.
Nope.
He's quite...
He's ready for the bag.
He's made his pick, and he's the oldest. He's the oldest, most important servant.
Oh.
So he is probably the most trusted. That makes sense why he would put his...
And he has a really good hat.
He probably does.
Really expensive hat.
Yeah. And so he sees Rebecca... And he thinks, of all my years of life, she seems to be the one that is good enough for my master's son. Yeah.
And she got glasses, she's got short hair, yep. She's my master's type. She's wearing Dunlop Vollies. He'll love that.
Or at least KT26s.
Yeah, perfect.
So he asks her for a drink, she gives him a drink. And then she says, oh, and let me also draw water for your camels. Which, he has 10 camels.
Yep.
And they're all just kneeling there by the water, apparently not drinking because it's a well and they can't draw it out. So they're just kneeling there, being all reverent and such. And she pours her entire jug of water that she has just drawn into the trough and then fills it up. Completely with other water that she draws, which shows a really awesome servant heart.
Definitely.
Especially to a stranger, somebody that has traveled a long way. I think it's pretty awesome, and it may not happen these days because of stranger danger. It may not have happened back then because of stranger danger. Maybe she just had a feeling, like he had a feeling.
Stranger danger is so weird.
Yeah.
Today we walked past a dude who was trying to move like a double bed mattress by himself. And the person I was with was like, oh, do you need any help? And he was just like shocked, like, yeah, that'd be awesome. And it saved him like 5 minutes of struggle.
Yeah.
And it was so easy and there was no danger. But I wasn't the one to initiate that because I was like, oh, he's a stranger. I better not help him because I've been well trained where I live now that you just don't talk to strangers.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
Strangers are great. Especially the stabby ones.
Yep, lots of points of connection there. Great, that was subtle. Then he asked to spend the night. He and whoever he took with him, it could have just been 10 camels, him leading a caravan of camels. Can we spend the night, please? And she says, yes, sure, I'll go home and tell my family, get it prepared. We will meet you back here in a sec. Then he bows his head and worships the Lord. I think that's really cool. It's the second mention of worship in the Bible. And it is in response to God coming through and fulfilling a promise that even we made our own terms to.
Yep.
Pretty awesome. So he recognizes God's hand in it. Then Laban, Beck's brother, comes out and meets him and invites him to come into the house. Now we meet Laban later on. With Jacob, and we'll get to that at the end of this episode, kind of. We'll hint at it. And so then they go back to the house that has been prepared. I don't think Nahor is actually mentioned in this chapter. He's mentioned, but it doesn't say that he was there.
No.
It just says Rebecca's mother and brother.
Yeah.
So it could be that Nahor is dead.
That's so sad.
Or somewhere else, and Laban is speaking... on behalf of the household,
yep.
Perhaps, and giving the blessing. Regardless of what happens, the servant tells him everything that took place, down to the very last detail. I prayed this, and then she came out of nowhere, and I'm like, whoa, it's got to be her. Yes, totally. Here's, you know, here's this ring, here are these bracelets, and we got a ton more where that came from. You see the stashes we got over there. And Laban's like, whoa, that pretty good case. I think I will consider this. They go back to Rebecca's place, and then Laban and the household give the servant the blessing, saying, you can take Rebecca.
Yeah.
They bless Rebecca. And they are well aware, by the gesture of the servant going out to fetch a wife, that Rebecca will not live with them anymore. And I can only imagine what that will feel like for my parents when my brother, who's married to a Canadian, and I move overseas and other places. I mean, we already live away from home, so it's a similar kind of thing. But at least it is within a camel's ride. Sydney to Melbourne's not that far. So, yes, they give the blessing, and then they go back to Abe's place, and Isaac walks out to meet them. I imagine he would be pretty nervous. It's like a Married at First Sight. I think that's actually a TV show.
Greatest TV show I've ever seen. First time I watched it, it was in Swedish, and I only understood like a third of it. Whoa. But I since have watched the Australian version, and it's so good.
Oh, man. The only times I've watched that have been at the doctor's office, where it's been on it's way like too loud.
Watching,
so even if I'm reading or listening to a podcast or something, all I hear is the TV show. So I just, my eyes are drawn up, and I'm watching this guy get married to a woman that he's never seen before, and they kind of kiss on the cheek or hug instead of kissing, and it's
so cute.
It's
so fascinating, because some of them are terrible together.
Some of them are, and I'm sure some of them have actually worked, but it just seems like such a dumb thing. It's like The Bachelor, or The Bachelorette, or Farmer Wants a Wife.
Oh, but it's better because it's like looking to see what is at the basis of a good marriage. Like, they actually talk it out. Like, how would we make this work if we want to make it work? Because we have no background. Yeah. It's the same with this, because back in the day, I think it was like that all the time. Like, you just picked a trade partner and took their daughter.
Yeah.
And you just had to either make it work or it just sucked.
Mm.
So it kind of makes sense that most of the patriarchs seem to have terrible wedding or marriages.
Yeah. But then they end up being married for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I've heard it said that the majority of arranged marriages are very, very long lasting. They're lifelong. Yeah. Because, like you said, they just have to make it work.
Yep.
Which
is awesome.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. Okay, so he's nervous. He goes out there. He's walking around, probably pacing back and forth. And then Rebecca says, who's that guy that's just walking around coming out to meet us? And the servant says, that is my master Isaac. And she goes, oh, better cover myself. Is it a wedding veil that she covers herself with? She covers herself with some kind of veil, which is probably some...
It was the mosquitoes.
It was
the mosquitoes. She's like, get away. Net.
Yeah, that's right. I think it probably was summertime then. And they were in a valley, so swamps and
so many whatnot. Swamps.
So some kind of marriage ritual happens, and they go into Sarah's old tent, and they become husband and wife.
Yay!
Somehow.
Lub!
Verse 67, because that's how long this chapter is, says, she became his wife and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted in his mother's death. I think it's a really beautiful picture of what happened. And it shows that he was ready. He was ready to love whoever came on that camel back from Haran. And
I wonder if that's an important comment, that he was comforted after his mother's death. Like, was his mother's death super hard for him?
Yeah.
Was he a bit of a mummy's boy because of the trauma that his dad took him through?
Whoa.
And does that show up later when he's a dad and he lets his wife kind of run over him?
Yeah, and his wife, Rebecca, ends up taking a favorite. Yep. And Jacob becomes the mummy's boy and...
Gross.
Whoa, weird. Okay.
Not that mummy's boys aren't great, no, but they're also terrible.
Yeah, taking favorites with your children, as we'll see throughout the rest of Genesis, leads to problems.
Unless you do it hilariously like mine, because everyone knows Peter isn't the favorite. I'm the favorite.
Okay, Genesis 25, Abraham, it says, married Keturah.
Solid name. Sounds like a ninja princess.
I can imagine that she was probably 100 years younger than him. And so creepy. And there's possibly no exaggeration.
I am 25.
I'm 150.
Like, oh, gross.
Okay, so Abraham ends up dying 28 years after Sarah's death. It seems the beginning of this chapter seems to imply that he married Keturah after Sarah's death. So
you would hope.
You would hope. So maybe 26, 27 years later. Would he have got married before Isaac did? Remarried before maybe. Isaac? Okay, regardless of what happens, he has 6 more kids. What? This is something that I always gloss over when I read Genesis.
Same.
And I forget that he didn't just have 2 sons. Nope. He had...
a bunch.
He had many kids.
And then later down it says, and Abraham gave gifts to the sons of his concubines.
Yeah.
So he had another wife and apparently lots of concubines, multiples.
He was basically the leader of a village.
Just making babies all over the town.
Yeah, weird. So, this is the part of Abraham's life. Right at the very end, the bookend, we see that maybe his life wasn't as straightforward as we imagined the whole time.
Unless that was straightforward back then.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know what the deal is with concubines. Honestly, I don't want to look too much into it. Because, I mean, I understand it's there. She's there for the pleasure of...
many things.
...of the man and... probably, I don't know.
If wealth was in children, why not have a bunch of children? And yeah, if your family line goes through your blood children, maybe concubines were a way to make children without having to have them included in the line. So it was like cheating.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Okay, so when Abraham dies, verse 9 says that Isaac and Ishmael both buried him. Which I think is... I think that's kind of cool, that even if they were... it shows that they at least met up.
Yep.
A number of times afterwards, and that makes sense. Ishmael's father is Abraham.
Yep.
Or was, rather. But they both buried him, and it shows some kind of... some kind of unity between the line of Ishmael and the line of Isaac. Yep. Kind of.
And who knows how tense that funeral was.
Yeah.
And he was buried next to Sarah, which is a cool little almost tick on their relationship more than any other.
Yeah, and totally, yeah. It's reinforcing the fact that she is the one through whom the promise is going, or has gone. And it's the field that he bought legitimately in the land of Canaan, so he was basically being like a seed planted.
Yep.
In the land himself, he and Sarah. So in verse 21, we learn that Rebecca was barren, and later on it basically says that she was barren for 20 years, because they got married when Isaac was 40, and she had twins when he was 60.
So that's so odd that another of the line is barren.
Okay, if you think about it, though, they were related.
Yeah.
So because Sarah was Abraham's half-sister, Rebecca was Abraham's niece, then Rebecca was had some genetics the same as Sarah, so it could have been actually a hereditary thing in that...
terrible genetics.
...in that line. Regardless of what the genetics look like, it was... another challenge that God overcame, and Isaac cried out to God and said, we want to have kids, this is important to us. And instead of it taking however many years it took Abraham, 30 years or something. She has twins just a verse or two later, which is great, instead of a couple of chapters, but that could have been 15 years of waiting.
Yeah.
We don't know. We do not know. Regardless, she has twins. When she is pregnant, she feels them fighting, and that's not unlike twins to do that, apparently. No. Not from personal experience. And she says, God, why is this happening? God says, two nations are in your womb. They wouldn't have known that at the time. It would have been like, what is this one baby doing?
Yeah.
Doing backflips? What the heck? And he says, one nation is stronger, one is weaker. The older will serve the younger. So that is God prophesying of the future of these two kids. And then the birth of the twins. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak. I like to picture a red Wookiee.
Yep. Or a Mook. A red Mook.
Star Wars does the Bible. So then Jacob comes out holding his brother's heel. That was after the whole the ribbon tied around the Watsy, wasn't it? So he was the deceiver. I'm going to come out first. Just kidding. Then, yeah. Okay, so then Esau grows up and becomes a skilled hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob becomes a tent dweller.
Yeah, he just lives in tents. He's a hippie.
Isaac loved Esau, and Rebecca loved Jacob. So we can see that, if you think about it, within Abraham's household, there was definitely sibling rivalry. But that was, it was kind of a little weird because Ishmael was not a son of the promise, but Isaac was.
Mm-hmm.
And here, a generation later, again, there is tension in the household. This time, instead of the tension being between two wives, it is between father and mother. So,
farmer and wife.
Farmer and wife. It is... It's a weird little hint at the stuff to come. Okay, then one day Esau came in out of the field while Jacob was cooking stew. Esau was exhausted. Esau said, "Give me some stew." Jacob replied, "Give me your birthright." Esau replied, "I'm about to die. What good is a birthright?" And then Esau swore to him. My question is, did he put his hand under his thigh?
Most definitely.
Probably
did. Or got the family sword.
Or he got the family sword, yep. So that is the exchange that happened, and then suddenly Jacob becomes the inheritor of the promise.
Yep.
But that does not officially happen until Isaac passes the blessing onto him.
Yep.
Which is in the next chapter. That whole interaction strikes me as a little odd, given that, first of all, I don't understand the significance of the birthright.
Me neither. Sounds stupid.
Especially not being oldest kids. We're like, meh.
I'll make my own fortune, thanks.
That's right. Imagine if the birthright got passed down through the middle kids.
That'd be the best.
We would be... on top of the world.
Still not much.
Me neither.
Just a whole bunch of cool stuff.
Yep. So, I don't understand the birthright. First of all, if you do, email scripture@bailey@gmail.com or message us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on our website.
And send us drawings of Esau.
Send us drawings of the... a little red hairy baby Wookiee. or even just a red hairy baby. that would be... Oh, but then that means he probably grew up to be a red hairy man.
Yeah.
He ended up looking exactly like a red Wookiee.
Yep. They didn't have shaving utensils back then. He just grew it all out. Long hair,
don't care. Oh, man. He truly would have been a walking carpet.
Yep.
That's a Princess Leia quote. Wow. He probably could have gone without clothes and nobody would have known.
Yep.
Weird.
Which is weird later when the guy has to put things on his arms. Anyway, sold his birthright, and I wonder if that was because the whole time the mum is repeating what God told her to the son, or if it is because Esau just genuinely doesn't care and just wants to hang out on the land, because he seems to just be a natural doer of things and seems to make his own fortune anyway.
Yeah.
And then later when his dad, Isaac, is about to hand on the whatevers, the mum is like intentionally planning and scheming against the dad so that it goes a different cultural way.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it all comes down to the thing that God told her, or if she's just a schemer and she's trying to get the favorite to get things. And if it is that, if it's just God's words coming to life, that's cool. And she actually has faith that God will show up.
Yeah.
But if she's just a, not a nice lady, a schemer.
Yeah.
And God just redeems it somehow, that's odd.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is so countercultural. And God's countercultural. But then he uses the cultural lines as well.
And he loves family, so it doesn't really make sense that he would allow this one to be torn apart just so he could work through it. But then there are other times in the Bible that that happens. I guess we just have to trust that he knew what he was doing. Maybe he did give the idea to Rebecca, and Isaac was too stubborn to realize that Jacob was the one that it was meant to go through in the first place.
So either Isaac is a terrible dad because he's culturally not the head of his household, or he's a terrible dad because he's not following what God told him.
Yeah.
But ultimately, Isaac is not a great guy as dad or husband.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of that could go back to the trauma that he experienced as a kid with his own dad.
It's all back to the trauma.
And again, we see in the next chapter that he, some of the trauma that he experienced with his own father and, I guess becoming what you don't want to become about your father as a lot of us that are grown men are discovering about ourselves, or people are pointing out to us that we're refusing to discover. There is another famine wherever they are, and they go to Gerar, or Gerar, where Abimelech lived. And he does the whole she's my sister routine.
Classic.
Just like his father did. Twice. But not while he was alive.
Oh.
The last time it happened was probably maybe 9 months, maybe 6 months before he was born. I wonder if he would have heard that story. He probably would have heard it from somebody in the camp, maybe one of his master's servants, or maybe from Abraham himself.
Yep.
Something like that, but Abimelech once again falls for it. I guess this time it makes a little more sense. Okay, he's lying, first of all. She is not his sister. She is his cousin, if you want to look at it that way. But she is also significantly younger than Sarah was last time when, when Abraham tricked her because she was 90. And this time we can suspect that Rebecca's probably 40.
Yeah, but they both moisturized, so they had very good skin.
That's right, yeah. And they lived near swamps, so it was naturally moist.
Oh, so. Mud masks.
Yep. And mosquito nets. So Abimelech says, "Leave, because you are mightier than us." And this is after he finds out that it is not true that she is his sister. They are married. And so he's like, "Whoa, okay, I fell for it, huh? And now you can dwell in our land." And then Isaac lives there and becomes super duper rich.
Super rich.
Incredibly rich. He sows for the harvest and then reaps 100-fold in the first year. That's crazy. It's ludicrous.
That is a good word. Ludicrous.
And on top of that, he's already inherited everything from Abraham.
Yeah.
So he's probably richer, not only than the city that he is in, but probably multiple cities that he's surrounded by.
He owns so many boats.
He could definitely own a whole fleet of boats if he wanted to. Abimelech says, "Leave, because Probably because of the same thing that happened with Abraham and Lot, where they had to separate because there wasn't enough room for everything. So he does. He leaves. And then eventually, Abimelech and Pelak, or whatever his name is, meet up with Isaac again and make a covenant with him like they did with Abraham. And once again, it's a covenant of protection and alliance, blah, blah, blah. Being one of the blessed nations that God blesses the earth.
Yep. And God seems to turn up in different places to assure him that he's the God of your father Abraham and he'll bless you.
Yep.
So he's got the confidence backing him. And then Esau takes some wives and they seem to make life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah.
Yeah, Esau marries Judith and Basemath, or Basemath.
Basemath.
If you think...
One plus one, two plus two. Basemath.
Yeah. And Isaac and Rebekah are not happy with his choice in wives. They are, what, Hittites or something? I forget. Great, so that would be pretty terrible for them. So that's another thing going against Esau, is his poor choice in who he marries.
Oh, he loves making the wrong choice in women.
He just loves making the wrong choice in general.
Yeah.
But definitely in women. Okay, Genesis 27, the last chapter of this episode. Isaac blesses Jacob instead of Esau. So Esau is out in the field. Isaac is blind, which is a...
And seemingly also hand blind. Yeah. And smell blind. He's all of the blinds.
Yeah, he's just very... Yeah, he's...
Maybe they just weren't touchy-feely. So he just assumed it felt like that.
Whoa. So maybe he held Esau when he was a baby, a little hairy baby.
And that was it.
And then hadn't touched him ever since.
Nope.
So he's like, well, he was hairy back then, so he's... Probably
he must
feels
be
like
hairy. This is what he
feels like.
Probably
feels like a goat skin now.
A big
now.
Old goat. I love you, goat boy. He's my goat boy.
Oh, man. It's so weird, though, because, like you said, Rebecca is scheming and says, oh, Jacob, you can get the blessing if you do this.
Yep.
And Jacob's like, oh, okay. I mean, I've already got his birthright because you've been whispering in my ear like Gollum and Sméagol this whole time. And then
he makes the sweet stew that his brother makes, so he's learned how to cook.
Yep.
I wonder if that's normal. The boys cooked.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem like they had any sisters.
Oh, that's true.
So his mum probably would have wanted to teach one of them and would have seen that Esau preferred being alone in the field and doing that type of thing. So she's like, Jacob, wanna...
You'll be my stand-in daughter.
Yeah. And then he ends up being the stand-in firstborn. So he puts a goat skin on and he, does he do something to obscure his smell?
He just rubbed dirt on him for the time being.
Yep. And then he goes into his father with the stew and he appeases him and he's like, yeah, give me the blessing. And his dad's like, your voice is that of Jacob, but your hairy goat skin is that of my...
My goat son.
My little bear.
The real goat boy.
My red Wookiee son. So I'm a little bit confused. No, I assure you, I am your son Esau. Okay, I guess...
I've just been screaming in the shower, practicing for my hardcore band.
I guess I will bless you then. So then he...
But then he says, kiss me!
Yeah.
So there must have been a touchy-feely. Oh, this guy. Blind touch.
This freaking guy.
Anyway, he blesses him.
Yeah. Bad dad.
And he blesses him pretty good.
Yeah. So summarize the blessing for us, Jez.
He'll have some richness, and he will have the dew of the sky to bless him.
Mm-hmm.
And he will serve his brother. But when you rebel, you will break his yoke from your neck. Oh, hello! Mm. Oh, no, that's for Esau. Dang.
Oops, wrong one.
The God will give him the dew of the sky and the richness of the land and the abundance of grain.
Yeah.
And people will serve him and he'll be master. and whoever curses him will be cursed. And then Esau runs in and is like, no, you're supposed to bless me. Yes. Give me some blessing. Is there blessing left? Give me the blessing. And then he gives him a tiny, weird, cursed blessing.
Yeah, the blessing begins the same. You're blessed by the dew of the sky and everything.
But then he will be the server.
Yeah, and that's harkening back to the promise, the prophecy that God spoke over the twins in the womb.
Yep.
That the older will serve the younger. And so then Esau gets really mad.
Super mad.
Really mad.
He turns redder somehow.
Yeah. If his face could get any redder, then that's what happens.
Steam comes out.
And I imagine his hair all over his body is bristling on end. So he's like this big, fuzzy red.
Super fuzzy, man. Like a puffball.
Yeah. And Isaac goes, well,
I'm happy.
I may be blind, but I can tell that he's not happy. So, Jacob, you, your mother and I, we've been talking. And we've decided you should get the heck out of here.
Yeah.
Because your brother will kill you. So go and live with your mother's brother, Laban, in Haran. And when you are there, you can maybe find something to pass the time.
Go back to Wollongong.
Go back to the Gong. You might find a wife or two. They may or may not be sisters. You may have to work 7 years to marry them both. And then work another 7 years after that.
And then just have a whole bunch of children.
Many, many kids. And then have some kind of contest in your family with baby making. But regardless, When your brother's cooled down a little bit and his face is less red, which may not ever be the case, maybe you can come back then, and then things might be okay for you. Regardless, you've been blessed, so go and live with Laban. And that is the end of chapter 27. And that is the end of this episode of Scripture Read Badly. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, any statements of, I don't know.
Any statements. Please send them to scriptureadbadly@gmail.com.
Because I've run out of...
You can read my writing at donateattrash.com.
You can read my writing at anotherunnecessaryblog.wordpress.com.
We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
And we have a website, scriptureadbadly.com. And... you'll hear us next time on this podcast. We will be continuing the story of Jacob as he flees. This is unfortunately the last episode with Jeremy and I in person for a while.
Sad face.
We'll go back to the old Skype connection. Hopefully that'll be just like as good. But yes, this is us. I'm too tired. I need some milk. Maybe some goat milk.
Oh, gross. Goat's cheese is all right. Milk, so
how about goat skin?
La 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 la.
Nope. Okay, that's it. Bye.